clock. Call the meeting to order. Good morning, George.
Good morning.
Good morning, Dr. Capps. Good morning, Todd Stewart. Andrea Anderson. Good morning. They're joining us by Zoom. We'll proceed to the roll call. Secretary Brickley.
Regent Bale.
Present.
Regent Ball.
Present.
I'm present. Regent Edmonds.
Present.
Chair Higdon.
Here.
Regent Henson.
Here.
Vice Chair McKinney.
Present.
Regent Milliken.
Here.
Regent Nichols.
Here.
Regent Spiller.
Present.
Regent West.
Here.
Mr. Chair, we have 11 regents present, all regents present, representing the quorum.
Great. Good morning, everyone. I see Provost Stevens has joined us. Good morning, Provost Stevens. We will next move to the agenda item of approval of minutes. Do I hear any additions or corrections?
On page 3, under EX3, I think we need to insert approval of the original motion.
EX3 has to do with the delegation of authority, I previously consulted with Vice Chair McKinney and Jerry McDonald, and we recommend to the board that we make that correction or addition. Do I hear any questions or comments? Do you need more time to look at that? So, Vice Chair McKinney, the addition would be show that there was approval of the original motion for acceptance of the delegation of authority. Having proffered that addition, is there any other comments, changes to the minutes for March 2021?
Motion to approve the minutes.
Got a motion to approve the minutes by Regent McKinney.
Second.
Seconded by Regent West. Again, any other discussion? All in favor, aye, or raise your hand.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion to approve the minutes with the addition is hereby approved. Before we get into our committee reports and action items, I'd like to take a moment to acknowledge our board secretary, Julia McDonald. I know each of you got a shocking, surprising letter yesterday. I share the unique honor of she and I arrived at Western at about the same time. And it looks like we're going to be leaving Western at about the same time, 12 years. Personally, I cannot express the appreciation and what a resource that she has been to me personally, to this board, to the president, as I've made those observations, and, of course, to the entirety of the university faculty and staff. So I would like for any other regent that would like to express any comments to join in, but I want to take this opportunity to acknowledge her service, to let her know that she's going to be deeply missed. She's welcome back anytime, and that she has been all in and made a tremendous difference in who Western Kentucky University is. So with that, I open the floor. Anyone else want to share a comment? This is appropriate. I will tell you that I gave Julia a heads up this was going to happen, so she's not totally shocked of the circumstances, but I thought it was appropriate that we extend our gratitude and acknowledge her service. Or is it Cavani?
Mr. Chair, being university president is probably one of the more challenging jobs on the face of the earth. But for me, it's been made much easier because of Julie McDonald. And one of the reasons we've been so successful as a university is because of her work. And I'm thankful for the guidance she's provided, the history she's given me, But most importantly, good counsel and support. There are days when I don't know if up is down and down is up, and Julie made sure I got to where I needed to be without breaking anything. And she's taught me in the past 4 years about patience and grace and staying cool under pressure, and I certainly will miss her personally. The university will miss her talents. And what you want to do in these positions is leave the place better than when you found it. And WKU is certainly better for her having been here for 12 years. And so, Julia, I know you'll miss our 8 a.m. meetings on Monday mornings to figure out what we're going to do that week, or for you to figure out what I cooked up over the weekend. But thank you for all you've done for me, for Casey. We'll desperately miss you, but are very excited for you as well. Taking advantage of the opportunity you have, building a business and taking care of family is crucial. And so thank you for all you've done.
Well, I haven't been on the board as long as Freddie. Certainly, Julie has been a key asset to my participation, as I'm sure everyone else is on this board, and her counsel and observations have always carried a great deal of weight and value, and yes, it was distressing to read that, but at the same time, I knew what kind of effort she had put into it, and really, for her, it's been an all-consuming job, and she's going to follow her head and her heart in a different direction, and I hope that will be beneficial to her and her family, and I'm sure that it will, and I'm sure we will all call on her at some point in the future.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate having the opportunity to speak. I first thought it was spam. Spam, and the note came out, or some very sick joke that someone was playing on all of us, and I sent Julia a note, and I just said, just tell me it ain't so. I'm on Zoom, I wish I were there in person, but I'll tell you that I echo Phil's comments, I'll echo Tim's comments. My time on this board has been uniquely, been special and successful because of you. We've had great leadership when Dr. Renzo was there, and now that Tim has come in. But the one source that was always there, that you could always depend on, that you could always get guidance from, and you could get good counsel from, is Julia. And I know if I couldn't reach somebody, as long as I could reach her, I knew everything was going to be okay. And I think it's great that we acknowledge her talent, but I'd really like to just acknowledge the person, the awesome person that she is. And I wish her nothing but success and wealth, and I know she'll be just as successful in whatever else she does as she has been with us. But again, this is just, in my mind, one special individual, and I'd like to recognize her for that. Thank you very much, Jim.
I don't like it either, George. There's not been a person that's been more valuable to my time on the board. Certainly a better link between the regents, the president, and the regents, president, and the regents in the community, than Julia. I have sometimes listened to her counsel, and as you all realize, sometimes I don't. But it has always been solid. And I could go on all day, but it's too upsetting right now. So I just appreciate the time that it's been an honor and a privilege to work. Thank you.
As someone who works side by side with their spouse currently, I'm hoping that she'll be back in about 2 weeks.
That doesn't happen.
So true.
Even if that doesn't happen, I doubt we'll find anybody that's as dedicated. Didn't matter what time I texted her, early morning, late evening, I always got a text back and could get some insight onto what was going on around the university. Didn't exactly understand the situation, so I'm going to miss you.
I would just like to say I will miss seeing your smiling face when I come in here, especially when I text you to tell you I'm running late for a meeting and then you let everybody know why. I'm stuck on I-65. I am just looking forward to, though, the fact that when you're not here that I'll get to see you afterwards. We still got to take Soph to a Princess Tea where your daughter let me know that she was the most important person in the room. We need to let Mitch know I'll still bring bottles of bourbon for Christmas. And then we need to practice all those things my mother taught you in home ec class. Julie and I are Owensboro girls. We did not know this until after I was a board of regent for how many years? I mean, this is bizarre. I loved coming in here and seeing Julia. Loved getting my hotel reservations made, and then somehow, 3 or 4 years into this, we found out an Owensboro connection, and she actually had my mother for class, which was kind of funny because she figured out who I was, and then she knew my youngest sister, and then we have, if you're from Owensboro, now this is the only thing we disagree on, if you're from Owensboro, you like Old Hickory. Not Julia, she likes Moonlight, you see, that's the only thing we disagree on, and there's only one other thing I've got her on. It's the fact that I married Don Henley in my dreams and shit. But I look forward to more time with you, but I will miss seeing your smiling face every time I come into a Board of Regent meeting and a committee meeting.
Okay. Julia, thank you. From the moment I got here, no one has been more welcoming than you, and I appreciate it so much. I said the exact same thing George did, and Julia will verify it. I said, please tell me it's not true. So I'm going to miss you terribly. But and family businesses are hard, no doubt about it. But I wish you all the success in the world. Thank you.
Thank you. Very, very humbled by all the kind comments. And like I said, this is a very, very bittersweet decision, a very bittersweet time. But it's the right time for my family. And WKU will always hold a special place in my heart, as will each of you. I will miss tremendously all the Caboni-isms. I have a book prepared. but as I told President Caboni, I am just a phone call away. I'm not turning my back. I'm not leaving my friends and family on the Hill. I'm just going to my home family. So thank you all for everything. And I value each and every one of you tremendously.
Well, thank you, Julia. Let us recognize you. Thanks, everyone. I want to read our consent agenda statement. The committees of the board met on April 9th to discuss each item on their respective agendas and recommended submitting the agenda items to the full board for action. Items FB4 and EX2 were not presented at the committee meeting and shall be removed from the consent agenda for further discussion and a separate vote. At this time, we are ready to move into our committees, and we'll start, as usual, with Academic Affairs, and Chair Bale, will you please take over?
All right, we have 6 action items, which we can deal with by consensus, unless someone has a reason they would like to pull one of those. If not, these were discussed at our committee meetings and all received unanimous approval at that time, so I'll entertain a motion for approval of action items 1 through 6.
So moved. Second.
I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, like sign. And action items pass. We have one other item on our agenda for this morning, and most of you, in fact, hopefully all of you, are aware of the latest national championship, number one team in America, Forensics, which is an amazing accomplishment. And Provost Stevens, would you like to say anything about them? And I think we have Gaynor here. So,
They have done an amazing job over the years. And as we've been challenged with budget cuts they have also, after reviewing their footprint, they have done just an amazing job. This year was incredible for them. I understand that Gaynor's going to do a presentation. Ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right,
Gaynor?
Yes, sir.
The floor is yours.
All right. I've been giving this presentation a whole lot of thought. This year's been really hard. But let's just acknowledge that. There's something that we see on our team. We tell our students this. It's something we ripped off of Bill Belichick or Nick Saban or something like that. But the saying goes, keep your mind where your feet are. And we tell that to our students as a way of helping them work through the kind of anxieties of college life, right? Keep your mind where your feet are. What we have experienced this year has been unbelievably, globally and certainly at this university, unbelievably challenging. And what we have in front of us, based on what I'm reading, is also going to be very challenging. Right? We have challenges in front of us, we have challenges behind us. But in this moment right now, I'm here to talk to you about something that you should all be extremely proud of. Because you facilitated something truly historic and groundbreaking and incredible. I'll be right back. One moment.
Graduate, I believe, of our program, and the skills that these young people have are right here.
In forensics, we call this a visual aid. Believe me, board, I would not wear sneakers in front of a Board of Regents meeting under any other circumstances. I'll explain to that in a moment where I got that. But good morning, everybody. Thank you all for allowing us to be here today. It's an honor and a pleasure to speak to the board. My name is Gaynor Newman. I'm a WKU alum. I was a student in 2007, graduated in 2010. I've been the director of forensics program here at WKU since 2014. Okay, so I want to thank President Gaboni for inviting me here to recognize and celebrate this team for this most extraordinary season. Unfortunately, our team members cannot be here today because they're either at home or traveling home as we speak, and I couldn't bear to ask them to get on another Zoom call. You know what I mean? It just felt wrong to do that at the end of this season. Before I tell you about our success at Nationals last month, I would like to speak briefly about our journey the past 12 months. Last season, we assembled what we believe to be a national championship caliber team. They fought all year long to reach that competitive level, only to watch our season and indeed the entire world come to a screeching halt. As we began preparing our students over the summer, it became increasingly clear that the entire season would be online. Forensics, in some form or another, has existed on this hill since before the founding of the university. Different iterations of speech and debate organizations have competed here at WKU, making it unquestionably the oldest student organization on campus. You might recognize this man if you know Dr. Randy Capps. This team has changed a lot over the last 120 years. Teams as small as 8 represented us in the 1980s. I competed on a team of 50 students. That's me. That's my wife. Today, our team of 31 members join us from 14 states and represent 16 majors. For the first time in team history, 51% of our team members are from historically marginalized groups. 35% of our team members openly identify as LGBTQ+. These students are carefully recruited from around the country because of their talent and potential as competitive speakers and debaters, but no one really knew what we were gearing up for this year. Informal debate as a concept first emerged in ancient Greece, and it would go online for the first time ever. Fortunately, we uniquely have a veritable dream team coaching staff. They said, okay, let's reimagine the concept of speech and debate. It's helpful to conceptualize speech and debate by comparing it to some activity like track and field. Much like javelin, middle distance, and hurdles, forensics is broken down into 11 different individual event categories, from limited preparation events to public address, interpretation categories, as well as Lincoln Douglas debate. In each of these categories, roughly 100 or so of the top speakers from universities around the country fight to reach the top 6, or the national final round. There, a panel of judges who will decide who will win the national championship in each of the 11 categories. At the internationals, all the students' collective efforts are tallied, and the team with the highest points wins the coveted team national championship trophy. We like to call him Oscar. Without the need to pay for hotels and rental cars, our students were able to compete at levels we have not enjoyed since budget cuts reduced our travel opportunities beginning my second year as director. With a more robust competition schedule, unbound by the burdens of time and space, we were able to compete against the very best of the best every weekend. We saw their weaknesses, and we prepared our students accordingly. For just a moment, I want you to think about the first Zoom call you did at the start of the pandemic. Then I want you to think about the 50th Zoom call you did in the pandemic. That's what we were up against, that Zoom fatigue. I would rather look at anything else but this screen right now. So what we did was we tried to keep things interesting. Our coaches and students went way outside the box and maximized the excitement of these virtual presentations. We designed makeshift studio environments. Students dreamt up new ways of engaging with the camera. Our coaches helped our students become cinematographers, lighting experts, and sound designers. We even had to become IT professionals on the fly. A quick example. In duo interpretation, it's an event that is grounded in the interaction of two different characters. Okay, so in a normal performance, you'll see two different actors on the stage, and they're interacting with one another right in real time. Well, in a Zoom call, there's a degree of lag when one person finishes speaking before the next person talks. You certainly have dealt with that in different meetings before. On top of that, the Nationals' COVID rules required the pairings to address one another from separate rooms. So they were supposed to be doing an acting event where they're seamlessly interacting with one another from two different rooms and dealing with Zoom. So how did we deal with that? We found ways to beat the delay in order to create a seamless environment. So we developed the choreography in the same room, like this. So the students are practicing in the same room together, right? Then we put them in rooms next to each other, and we required the students to talk loud enough to hear each other through the wall. This effectively allowed us to beat that Zoom lag, allowing our students to have uniquely seamless interactions in duo. So this is kind of what it looked like in the competition. So our students got creative. Yes, they got really creative with how they were going to deliver their absurd. Here she's kind of doing a makeshift house. It's for her ADS. It was hilarious. Anyways, sometimes we got really silly. Soon students started realizing that the performances were becoming so athletic that we decided to ditch the traditional dress shoes, heels, and flats and opted instead for sneakers. So we literally rethought the activity from the ground up. This season was never easy. Our team members have suffered some devastating personal losses. Two of our coaches literally saved a student's life this year. Excuse me. At the same time, this group of students took incredible initiative and fought to adjust to a world turned upside down. They participated in community nonprofits, religious and spiritual organizations, Greek life, social justice movements. One student managed a political campaign. Our students served on the Student Government Association, the Naming and Symbols Task Force, and even served on the hiring committee for the Dean of the College of Arts and Letters, just to name a few. Our students did all these things while maintaining an impressive 3.5 overall GPA this fall during a global pandemic. But the history making did not stop there. We attended two national competitions, the American Forensics Association, which only features speech activities, and the National Forensics Association, which includes debate as well and allows us to enter as many entries as we qualify for the tournament. At the AFA tournament, you can only enter 66 of everything you qualify to nationals. So the first competition was the American Forensics Association National Tournament. It was held April 1st through 5th. The tournament hosted 420 students with 1,200 total entries from 72 universities, including the University of Alabama, George Mason University, Yale University, Cornell University, and Vanderbilt University. After four grueling days of competition, we experienced an award ceremony unlike any other we've experienced before. in the 11 categories offered at the tournament. WKU students captured 5 national championship titles, tying the record for the number of individual championships at AFA. Team members captured 7 of the top 20 individual sweepstakes awards, a measure of individual success across multiple events in the competition. What that means is 7 of the top 20 speakers in the country from 72 universities are from Western Kentucky University. Finally, seniors Derek Collins and Emma Warnke were recognized as 2 of the 19 members of the AFA All-American team for their work in the community as scholars and as leaders. One school receiving 2 such awards is a rare achievement. With such stellar individual placings, we were confident that we had won as a team. We were floored by how much. They announced, in 3rd place, with 376.5 points, Bradley University. In 2nd place, with 433 points, the University of Texas at Austin. And your national champions, with 609 points, Western Kentucky University. This is the largest margin of victory in at least the past decade, and possibly of all time in that tournament. This is also the highest point total WGU has ever scored at the tournament. Here's them winning. And here's us bringing out Oscar. So, after 8 days, we had to shake off the rust on 30 new individual events and finalize the preparation for our 7 debaters to compete at the National Forensics Association tournament. We entered 7 debaters into the tournament. One of our... just a few more minutes, please. So we went to the National Friends Association tournament. These are our debaters. We entered 7 of them in the competition. Our rivals, Missouri State University, who won in 2019, the last nationals we were able to attend, entered 14 debaters. But what I like to say, if there's a competition between WKU and Goliath, always bet on WKU. So, of those total entries, 6 of our students, so 6 of the 7, advanced to the double octafinal round, meaning they advanced that first break round, against Missouri State's 5. The size advantage of our rivals disappeared quickly. From there, 5 WKU students advanced to the top 16, 3 students advanced to the quarterfinal round, or top 8. When the semifinal round posting fell, Andre Sway, a sophomore debater, was the last WKU member remaining in the competition. Remember, his freshman year, he did not get to attend nationals. So in the semifinal round, he experienced a technical malfunction. And what the judges were supposed to do is to pause him and then allow him to come back whenever his screen caught up. But instead, what the judges decided to do was to take away his prep time while he fixed the technical issue. So he did not have time to prepare against his opponent in that semifinal round. Unwilling to be deterred, Andre pressed on with less prep time than his opponent and won the semifinal round on a 5-0 judge decision. In the final round, Andre Sway fought valiantly against a student from Penn State University and ultimately won the final round of Lincoln Douglas debate in a 4-3 decision, becoming the Lincoln Douglas debate national champion. He represents WKU's 12th Lincoln Douglas debate champion. Andre also became the first black man to ever win the NFA national debate title. And he won that as a sophomore. Now, notice I said first black man. He's not the first black person to win that title. That would go to 2015's Nefertiti Dukes, also a graduate of Western Kentucky University. So, at the end of the day, the WKU team was crowned Team Sweepstakes champions in Lincoln Douglas debate with 131 points, the highest point total in LD ever. The University of Nebraska-Lincoln placed 2nd with 82 points, and our rivals at Missouri State placed 3rd with 79. Other universities competing include Penn State and UCLA. It was truly a history-making showing in debate. On the individual event side of things, we had 94 entries across 11 events. So each one of those 94 entries is 10 minutes of material composed by those students. So that's the work that we've been doing all year long. WKU advanced 84 of the 94 entries to the octafinal round, 58 students to the quarterfinal round, 32 advanced to the semifinal round. By the end of the last day of 4 grueling days of competition, WKU advanced 20 students to finals. WKU won national championships in duo interpretation, program oral interpretation, and rhetorical criticism. 5 WKU students were recognized with individual sweepstakes awards. In other words, 5 of the top 10 best speakers in the country at NFA were from Western Kentucky University. From Hattiesburg, Mississippi, Senior Derek Collins was recognized as the top presenter at the tournament, winning the individual sweepstakes national championship. At the end of the day, these collective efforts culminated in the individual events team sweepstakes award. Bradley University placed third once again with 530 points. The University of Texas at Austin placed second with 589.5 points. And WKU was crowned sweepstakes champion with 919 points. That is the largest point total in the history of collegiate forensics. But our students' stories don't end with this record-shattering performance in speech and debate. Our students were this year's outstanding student in the Department of Political Science, Management, and African American Studies. They were the scholar of the college of Gordon Ford College of Business. They successfully defended their honors thesis. They've been admitted to law schools at George Washington University, Loyola University Chicago, and the University of Missouri, all with full scholarships. They earned internships with the Congressional Black Caucus and Congressman James Clyburn. They managed local city commission races and won. They've been published in The Diplomat, The Hill, The North Korean Observer, and that's just the senior class, half of whom graduated summa cum laude. We absolutely could not have done this without these feats, without our peerless coaching staff. Our director of debate, Chad Meadows, director of individual events, Ben Roban, interpretation coach, Jeremy Frazier, limited preparation and public address coach, Seth Peckham, and our graduate assistant coaches, Camila Costa and Anthony Cervantes. And of course, our incomparable office coordinator, team mom, and air traffic controller, Deborah Ginsheimer. I do not believe that there's a coaching staff in this country in any collegiate activity as prolific as this staff. And I strongly believe that their continued results will strengthen that claim. In the last 11 years, WKU has captured 8 of the Lincoln Douglas Debate Championships. 2 more championships won the Nick Saban's Crimson Tide dynasty. Outside observers are noting that it may be the most successful run in the history of debate, matching Northwestern University's legendary teams under Scott Dithraki. In less than 15 years, Seth Peckham has coached 11 individual event champions. Jeremy Frazier has coached 12 individual champions. Our director of individual events, Ben Rova, has coached 20 individual champions. UCLA Bruins under the great John Wooden, the UCLA Bruins won an impressive 10 national championships. President Caboni, members of the WKU Board of Regents, our incredible alumni, and all those who support the vision of this program, I'm pleased to say that during a global crisis, we have swept both national championships for the 10th time in our history, in a history-making fashion. We thank you. We can't wait to see what the future holds. Go Tops. Chair, this is yours too. This is all yours.
I want to thank Gaynor and the team and the coaching staff. One of the reasons I wanted Gaynor to come visit, not just to share the accomplishments this year, but really to put in context what a crown jewel this team is for our university. When people ask me, what's WKU known for? Immediately, I talk about communications, debate, speech, and forensics. And one of the reasons we are so fortunate here is the investment that you all approved in those young people. Now, I will tell you, I know we get beaten up for investment in athletics a lot, but you don't hear a lot about our investment in forensics. These students are the best of the best, and they come to our hill because of the decisions we make to invest in them. There's going to be a lot of interesting things and opportunities ahead as we think about what the home for forensics looks like long-term on our campus. You know Garrett Conference Center is coming down soon, and that's where forensics has lived for a long time. They are in an interstitial space for a short period of time, and I think we're going to have some exciting news in the coming year or so about where it is we find a permanent home for them in a way that honors their place on our campus and also continues to attract 30 to 50, 64.
You can do it as big as you want. I try to see this way every day. Every day I try to see this way. Because I can do 35 right now.
So it's a special program. It's one of the reasons that I'm here at the university. As a student, as a graduate student, we knew about them and competed against them when I was in speech at LSU. Gaynor, thank you for persisting through just an unbelievable year and for all you do for our young people.
Any other comments?
Real quickly, I'd just like to say that from a professor point of view, what these students bring to our classes cannot be overstated. They bring up the discourse for everyone. Now, I had Emma Winocki in two classes in Hagrid this semester. And just like with athletes that you have to work with their schedule, I felt sorry for her this semester because I was really pouring it on and then looking at what she continued to deal with and how well she rose to that challenge. But then also what she brought up with her team. So, and what they bring to our community cannot be overstated as well.
That means the world. Thank you.
Other comments?
I don't think there's words to express how awesome the program is, the commitment, the recognition it brings to the university. Just thank you.
It's yours. It's ours. It's all ours.
And Gaynor, if the president doesn't get you exactly what you need to just send some of your students to make it. Not that you don't do a beautiful job yourself. We're proud that you're a graduate of that program and this university.
Thank you.
I'll just add that back in the fall when I entered into being president, of student body, students wanted pass D fail, and that was a long, hard-fought battle, and it would not have come to fruition, and if not for a couple of forensic students, Tess Welch and Isaac Keller. They both put in a lot of work, which Isaac served as my vice president. I asked him to come on board because I needed someone to challenge me in a lot of ways, and he did a good job at that. And actually a good friendship was formed out of that. But I asked Isaac and Tess to help me draft the arguments for pass, D, fail. And, of course, we took it to Faculty Senate and won. But it was just a fun time doing it alongside them. And they're very talented. And those are two people that I hope to keep up with in the future. So.
All right. Thank you for being here, Dana. With that, Mr. Chairman, the committee business is concluded.
Great information item, Chair Bill. And what an opportunity for us to enjoy that moment with you. Next, we will move to finance and budget, Chair McKinney.
Okay. The first three items, FB1 through FB3, are all presented at committee meetings and are presented for consent agenda approval. Would anybody like to remove any of these items for individual discussion? All right. Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to accept the consent agenda.
So moved.
Second.
All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Like? All right, motion passes. Then we have FB4, approval of the 2020-2021 operating budget revisions. Do you have a presentation to make on that one?
Okay. No, I do not. This is just a, these are some funds that really got caught up during when COVID started last year, and we didn't get to distribute it then. So it's just distributing back to the colleges and schools at this time. So in total, it's about $11.2 million that will go back to the colleges.
Okay. Thank you, Susan. Does anybody have any questions or comments on FB4? All right, hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve FB4.
So moved.
Thank you, David.
Second. Thank you.
Thank you, George. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, like sign. All right, that motion carries. That takes care of our voting items. We have an information item on the 2022.
I don't know how a budget presentation follows a forensic presentation. That's kind of scary. Do you have the flipper? Thanks. You should have gone after me.
I was nervous.
I'm going to get a little closer, if you don't mind. It seems a little strange up there. Okay, well, thank you. This is just an update and information item on the development of the operating budget for fiscal year 22. No action to be taken. Action will be taken at the June meeting on the budget. So just a little bit of high-level information on the development of the 22 budget. Since the 21 budget was developed in a very strange time with a lot of one-time COVID assumptions built in, what we did was we started with the fiscal year 20 base as a starting point to develop the budget, and we worked through from there. So I want to remind everyone, this is not the final budget. This budget presentation will focus on the BEC recommendation that was made to leadership probably about a month ago. The only caveat I have to that is that when the BEC made their recommendation to leadership, they did not have the additional performance funding that we got from the state, and that was about $1.8 million, which is now included in our budget. So it makes the numbers slightly different than the information item that was presented to you, but it's very good news. I mean, we got an additional $1.8 million. So what's important from here, once we get region input, is basically the fine-tuning of the budget will begin, and that's about $370 million budget, so there's a lot of fine-tuning. So this is kind of an empty slide, but I think what we plan to do maybe at the summer retreat is really to go through the performance funding model. That's a beast in and of itself, which would take probably about 30 minutes to do it justice. So this is just basically the past 2 years what we have received in performance funding. So in fiscal year 21, we received almost $800,000, and in this year, about $1.4 million. So we are progressing, and we're doing well as far as how we're competing with the other institutions. So now I'm going to run through the BEC, or the Budget Executive Committee budget proposal. So on the revenue side, what that committee was assuming was a 2% tuition rate increase overall. Now, I've got to put some assumptions around that. The CPE has still not made their final recommendation on what the tuition rate increase parameter will be. So this is not even final yet. That was only what the BEC recommended. The CPE is scheduled to meet next week to finalize that parameter. That's when, and that you can imagine, since we're a heavy tuition school, that's a extremely important parameter, which we will not know the final decision on that until, I think it's Wednesday of next week. They also were assuming stable enrollments overall, which at this point we're not seeing anything different that would give us any other information to plan on. So basically stable enrollments, and again, the full state appropriation. So we did build in that $1.8 million. Into this recommendation. So on the expenditure side, we want to look at trying to put together a salary pool that's close to what the tuition rate increased. So for this budget proposal, what they were recommending is a salary pool of 1.5%. And then that salary pool would be distributed January 1, so 6 months into the year. And that what that does is that aligns with the performance evaluations. So the performance evaluations, a person's evaluation period runs on fiscal year. So it starts July 1 and runs through June 30th. What that would do is then that would give managers several months to complete the performance evaluations, sit down with their employees, and then they would receive their salary adjustment in January. The other 6 months of the salary increase would be built into the next fiscal year's budget. There's some fixed cost adjustments built in there and some limited strategic initiatives, and let me run through those quickly. Again, I just want to caution everyone that none of this is set in stone at this point. These are just recommendations from the BEC. So faculty promotions are seen as a contractual increase. As faculty members move their promotion and or tenure and promotion cycle, and that's about $258,000. Some contractual increases within our software and information technology, about $415,000. Assistantships within the Ogden College of Science and Engineering, $60,000. and some funding to supplement the marching band budget of $160,000. Some other campus initiatives, some scholarship funds within our military science department, program specialists in our MBA, an assistant professor of criminology, and a very small addition to Leadership Strategic Investment Fund of about $215,000. The compensation pool, again, that was about a 1.5% pool. That would equate to about $1.1 million for 6 months of that. So this is the history, or about 3 years of history, on what our reduction targets have looked like. I think it's really important to note is that we're making progress. We're not there yet, but we are making progress. So you'll see the first line shows what our primary and support academic units, their targets look like over the years. I always like to say you have to, fiscal year 21, that's the COVID year. And there is some, just because of everything we had baked into that budget, the targets, they were one-time targets and they were actually larger. So I would focus on fiscal year 20 and fiscal year 22. So you can see that our academic units are going from roughly 4.6 million to about 3.1 million.
Matt, I'm going to add something here because I think it's really important. What was reported in the media as new reductions to the budget was actually poor reporting. We don't have an additional 7% of reductions, or $7 million of additional reductions. What the university is doing is managing through a gap between what we have and what we need by using carry forward. You all remember this conversation. And what we're doing over time is reducing that gap. The way the gap goes away is by replacing it with permanent reductions or additional revenue. And so we've made progress over time on that. If you look at academic affairs, administrative support, and university-wide reductions that we manage through each year. The reality is this is the same number this year, except smaller, as it was last year. And so managers have the ability to work through those numbers with the goal being, at some point in the next couple of years, to get to a place where there is no gap. But that requires difficult decisions and multi-year decisions to get us back to that place.
So to the president's point, if you look at the bottom line total, we've gone from roughly $14 million in fiscal year 20 to about $9 million in fiscal year 22. So what's going to be important is for us to manage through these as our tuition revenue gets on a growth trajectory and we make some permanent hard cuts to the expenditure budget. There we go. So you'll see what the projected revenue and projected expenditures are from the BEC recommendation plus those additional funds from the state. That equates to about a $5.73 million deficit or gap, let's say. And just a reminder, as the president was talking about, you just approved the return of about $11 million in carry forward. So there are funds there that will be carried forward into the next fiscal year that the units can use on a one-time basis to manage through. So it's really important, as the president said, to acknowledge that the gap is narrowing and it's becoming smaller over time. We're working with the vice presidents and deans to make sure that they continue to make the strategic budgetary choices and make the choices in a way that it's appropriate to make permanent reductions versus one-time reductions. So these unit targets, whatever they turn out to be based on what the final budget looks like and what tuition looks like, they'll be a bit different than they were this year. If you remember right, the current year budget had a bifurcated approach where we had central strategies and we had unit strategies. This will be simply unit strategies, and they will be targets that will be managed at the local level by the VPs and deans. So the VPs and deans will have every tool in their toolbox to manage through their expenditure budgets and to manage through their revenue budget. And that aligns very well with an RCM and our grant model. So just to wrap up with next steps after today and what we start working on for the next
6 weeks, so we get ready to report to you and to present the final budget in June for you to vote on. At this point, we're seeking input from the regents on what this recommendation looks like. Again, we are awaiting the final decision on tuition from the CPE next week, detailed balancing of all indexes, and the approval by the regents in June, and then the final load into Banner and effective July 21. So go ahead. Any questions?
I'm going to go off track for a second, so let's see if anybody else has any questions.
I think it's worth noting that these improvements and the progress we're making now is being done without any involuntary layoffs. And I think that's an achievement in today's environment in higher education.
Could I ask, you keep talking about the Budget Executive Committee who made this these recommendations. Who does that include in terms of representative of what groups, just to give us some background?
So we have the chair of the Faculty Senate, chair of the Staff Senate. Garrett, you'll have to remind me the lady's name.
Abby
Normal. She's from the Student Government Association. We have a couple of deans, Dean Murphy and Dean Bosta. They're on the committee. Vice President Logan is on the committee. The provost and myself co-chair of the committee. We have a department chair and another faculty member. And actually, Brian Denning, a staff member, is also on the committee. I forgot to introduce Brian. He's actually now joined the budget office as the director of budget and financial planning. And so he will roll off the committee because his role will now be different. So it's a pretty inclusive and, I think, a representative committee.
And as a follow-up question, going in a slightly different direction, this group has heard me talk about wages and salaries on this campus before, and I have a concern, and this is more on the staff side than the faculty side. As I drive around town and I see the wage inflation that's hitting our local community, and I realize that we have staff on this campus who now don't make what Steak and Shake is paying for someone to work year-round. If you've seen the sign, when they put their sign up for what they're paying now, it caused a ripple in the community. Waiting till January, especially on staff, when I'm seeing as someone who works with the local business community and looks what they're having to do, given the workforce reductions we did in 2018 and the voluntary separation that we just went through, we have gotten ourselves down to a key number of staff and limited number of staff in areas that they're very important to us, as we talked about today. And I wonder about waiting on that. We're going to get pressures very soon on those salaries as they have competition for in the local community.
One item that we're also waiting on is the compensation study. So most of the work has been done on the faculty side of that study. There's still work to be done on the staff side. And there's really, Shane, there's been no decision as to how the salaries are going to be distributed. It could be performance. There could be some components of compression. There could be some components of compensation of the compensation study, or a combination of the three. But you make a valid point. I certainly understand that.
For clarification, the data on the compensation study is to what year? What year was that presented?
So the work began on it before I arrived, David. So I want to say 2019. So
the compensation figures that were provided to the university were based on cost of living wages in 2018 and 19.
And I've talked to them about that. I've talked to HR about that, and there's a way that they can refresh the data, and so they plan to do that. So that's another reason that there's more of a delay, particularly on the staff side. So first, not only do you need to refresh that data, and I think they're also planning to do that on the faculty side, but there's also what makes staff a little more, I don't want to say difficult, but different than faculty, is that you're comparing staff to market. And so what we call a position here at Western, that may not be what they call it in the marketplace.
Right.
So you have to work with the managers and align all those different staff titles.
Totally understand that. Trying to search that data myself, it's very difficult to find apples to apples.
But no, that's a great point, and I've already talked to HR about that.
Kind of go off, President Gamoni, calling you to inform the board of the significance of our performance-based funding. What it says and
so what
kind of affirmation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you look at the performance funding model, we'll dive into this in August. It rewards very specific things, and in comparison to other institutions, retention. Persistence through freshman, sophomore, junior, senior year, graduation rates, targeted efforts for underrepresented minority students, first-generation students, folks in STEM fields, and graduation rates there. And so what you're seeing, that growth in our performance funding, so the first thing I have to say is thank you to David Givens, who worked with that performance funding model group, and the entire legislature. That made good, and the governor, made good on the promise to put funding into the performance funding model this year. The reason that number was able to go up is because there was more dollars. In previous years, we were just shifting money around, or in the worst case scenario, we were fighting over who's going to take a smaller reduction. That's not an incentive. It doesn't work. It doesn't work to incentivize behavior if there's no additional dollars. So we had additional dollars this year. The fact that we've gone up, several hundred thousand dollars is because our outcomes on retention, graduation rates, this should all sound very familiar to you, have gone up. And why have they gone up? Because our strategic plan aligns with the performance funding model, and all the work that our faculty and staff are doing to increase retention, to increase recruitment, to increase throughput to graduation, put us in a good place compared to our peers. And so we're gaining share. And at some point, we're taking share essentially away from other institutions. The hope is that this continues the trend, not just our trend of performance, but the investment at the state level. So next year is a budget year. We have to create a state budget for the biennium. And the hope is that the reinvestment continues. That allows us to have more flexibility with our budget than we had previously. You can remember, this has been a tough decade for higher education. But I am hopeful that this is the beginning of an uptick in investment in universities.
And Mr. Chair, let me make a comment that piggybacks actually on what President Gavoni just said and what Susan shared. All of the points that have been made by the regents are spot on, all valid, and I'm glad to hear that the university is focused on trying to address and resolve those issues as best that we can. I just don't want us to lose sight of how fortunate we are to be where we are. When you look at what other universities within the state of Kentucky and across the nation are dealing with from a financial perspective, and for us to be in the position that we're in, that we can even have a discussion about trying to resolve issues that are important to the faculty and staff, it is commendable to the leadership, to the whole team, to the university, and all the work that is done and what we're trying to achieve. And again, all valid points. I hope we can fix the situation for our staff. My sister is a staff, so I hope that's done. But more importantly, I really want to commend the team for helping us navigate through some very, very challenging times, especially last year. But even before that, as Dr. Gavoni says, the challenges that higher ed has faced over the decade. We are in a wonderful position, I think, to grow and accelerate our position within the state. So I want to give them credit for that.
Could you also explain how stable enrollment is actually a win,
yeah,
given our current senior class?
So as we're looking forward to next fall, the question is around what does our enrollment look like? And you can imagine in a year where we couldn't go into a high school because there were no students there, and students didn't have access to counseling around going to college,
It is a difficult year for anyone whose job it is to recruit students. So 6 months ago, there was a significant gap in the difference between year-over-year numbers for applicants. But where we're most challenged and continue to be a little bit challenged is with first-generation, low-income, and students of color. If you look at the indicators for enrollment for next year, we're in a pretty good place. We have a single-digit difference between last year and this year on deposits for housing, on the subscription to the Topper Orientation Program. Those are all things that people have to write a check for. And so if somebody has put a deposit down, signed up for orientation, it means they've invested and they're ready to come. And so that we are tracking essentially flat for enrollment next fall, given the increase we had last fall, I think it is a terrific place for us as an institution. But, and this is the important part, we have got to meet our mission. Remember last week at commencement, a third of the students who stood up, even the first people in their families to get a college degree. Right now, our applicant pool is down 25% for first-generation students because they don't have anybody at home helping them navigate the college going and college choice process. They haven't had that support from their schools to do that. And so what we have been doing and are going to continue all the way till September 1st is reaching out to the other organizations in the community that continue to have contact with those young people, not-for-profit organizations, churches, housing. But it's going to be pounding the pavement from now to September 1 to make sure that the life-altering and transformative experience that we provide to those people and their families, they don't miss out on. And we've got to do that. I mean, our Commonwealth needs those young people to go to something after high school. And my great fear is for those who do not, folks who decide to go to Steak and Shake because they're paying some obscene amount of money for new employees, they see that as their path and not something after college. And what we know is that for a stable, good life of income, beginning and having a career perhaps in fast food might not be the most stable place to be. We need folks to have something after high school. And I will say that it's either WKU, it's a community college, it's a technical degree, it is a certificate. I'm not saying just come to WKU, but this is something that we have to address as a state. It's what policymakers are focused on, but we have to do more. Otherwise, this is going to be a lost year of young people, and that has just devastating implications for their lives. But we, as an institution, are in a very good place.
One last question for me, if I'm not taking anyone's time. Perhaps not today, but at a future meeting, I would like to hear an update on the implementation of two strategic initiatives this board took on before I got here with RAMP and Axiom. Just hear where we are, what the hurdles are, the process to getting those fully implemented and working so that those things can fully help the campus make these transitions that we have approved in the past.
Yeah, I'll address just quickly on the decentralized budget model. We're in year essentially three of that, and where we have to get for that model to become fully functioning and the cross subsidies to stop is that gap we keep talking about, right? So we got to get that to a place where either with revenue or reductions that the gap is closed, so that when you grow in the College of Business, that there is the additional revenue is distributed based upon that growth in enrollment and a set of other things as well. Now, what we are using is the RAMP model to talk about the reduction targets. And so, for example, in the College of Business, that number is smaller because of the growth you've experienced than it would be in another college that has not experienced that same growth. So we're using the model, but for it to be fully functional, we've got to get that gap. And that's why that chart was so important. When you watch that closing over time, how do you accelerate that? Now, we've made some choices as an institution. The budgets are always about choices. In the Budget Executive Committee's recommendation, there is the elimination of a distance learning fee. That's a $4 million choice. That gap was $5 million.
So if you didn't make that go away, that reduction target might be $1.7 million. But that's a choice. And it's, is it the right thing to do for students? Absolutely. But it's a $4 million choice. And so as we work through the next 2-3 years, we're going to have to make the decision. If you have a salary pool, which we absolutely have to do, then my expectation is we get to a place where we have a stable 2% annual salary pool every year in perpetuity. That's a healthy, healthy organization. You're not going to find a university in the state like that. I was talking to a colleague at one of our sister institutions. They haven't had a raise in 6 years. But when we make those choices, it stretches out the time to making that gap go away. And so, again, that's the goal. How do you do all of these things at the same time? And I think at the retreat, there is a good time for us to have that conversation because it all involves strategic choices that we make that have long-term implications, and you're balancing all these things at once.
So I think as far as Axiom, your timing is perfect. I have a call with them. Brian and I are talking with them at 11:30 this morning. So still clean up to do. We're working through that with the deans, working closely with Dean Murphy and her budget manager and Dean Shook and his budget manager and getting the data cleaned up. I told Brian yesterday, I think we've got to have this ready for prime time July 1. Without a doubt. So the deans will have it as a tool to manage through next year. And I think we're making good progress. I mean, I think any system implementation has its problems, particularly around data and levers you pull and filters and all those different types of things. So we plan on getting boots on the ground from Axiom here on campus very soon to help us through the implementation.
Any other questions or comments?
Okay.
Thank you, guys.
Next,
finance and budget.
Thank you, Jason. That was a wholesome, good exchange this morning. So, thanks to all the regents for your questions, your comments, and especially Susan and her team and the president for the budget process, the transparency, engagement. For some of us old-timers, getting this information weeks, if not months, before we used to. So we're ready to go into executive session. However, does anyone need a break?
Mr. Chair, before we go into executive session, may I make...
I'm sorry, executive committee.
Ah, okay.
I'm sorry. I said, before we go into executive committee...
Very good.
Does anyone need a break? Julia's calling yes. Are you saying yes?
I think it's a good idea, but it's up to you all.
let's take a quick break. We'll say 5 minutes, and that means we'll be back in 10 minutes. Thank you. Okay, we're ready to get back on task. Thank you. Regent Nichols, in reflection during our little break, your comments were spot on as far as making us realize that we're so lucky and fortunate to be at a place to be having these conversations, unlike many of our sister institutions. And sometimes I know that gets lost, but thank you for bringing that to our attention.
I appreciate some of the work that everyone's doing.
So we're ready to start into executive committee. Apologize for that. We have two action items. Action item number one was handled in committee through the consent agenda. Number two is new for us today. And so we'll take care of executive item number one. Is there anyone that wants to remove that from the consent agenda for purposes of any kind of discussion? Ryan Russell is on the key, though. If we have questions, he can answer them. Otherwise, I will entertain a motion for approval of our six-year capital plan.
So moved.
I second.
Region Edmonds moved. Region Henson second. Any further discussion? All in favor, aye. Raise your right hand.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. We have unanimous approval. Executive item number two, which is new, is the approval of honorific naming for the Barbara and Callie Birch Institute for Transformative Practices in Higher Education. Dean Murphy is going to present on that topic. Dean Murphy.
Good morning, everyone. We are here to seek your approval today for the honorific naming of the Kelly M. Birch Institute for Transformative Practices in Higher Education as the Barbara and Kelly Birch Institute for Transformative Practices in Higher Education, in recognition of Barbara Birch's leadership and service to WKU, as well as the long-lasting impacts of her work on the field of higher education at large. Dr. Barbara G. Birch, WKU Provost Emeritus, died on January 5, 2020. Provost Emeritus Birch earned a bachelor's degree from WKU in 1959 before completing master's and doctoral degrees from Indiana University. She returned to Bowling Green, Kentucky and WKU in 1996, where she continued to devote her professional career to higher education and civic engagement, as well as to being an entrepreneur. Through her many roles, including Vice President of Academic Affairs, Provost, Faculty Member, Regent, Chair of the WKU Sisterhood, and founder of the Kelly M. Birch Institute for Transformative Practices in Higher Education, she demonstrated unwavering commitment to the faculty, staff, students, and future of WKU. Provost Emeritus Birch's leadership extended beyond the Hill. Through her involvement in many national organizations, including service as president of the American Association of Colleges for Teacher Education, as well as peer leadership in the American Association of State Colleges and Universities, as demonstrated through the creation of the American Democracy Project, her work will continue to benefit the broader higher education community for generations to come. Dr. Kelly Birch, daughter of Drs. Barbara and Ken Birch, died on July 15, 2015. She received a master's degree in mental health counseling from WKU in 1998, and she served as an associate professor of marriage and family counseling at WKU for 6 years. The mission of the Kelly M. Birch Institute for Transformative Practice in Higher Education is to serve as a catalyst in the cultivation and support of innovative practices and research initiatives related to student success that advance the mission of WKU and inform best practices in public higher education. This honorific naming request is recommended in recognition of Provost Emeritus Barbara Birch's leadership and commitment to WKU. We have a video.
She had the biggest heart to go with the brightest mind of anyone I'd ever known. Those are the words Dr. Pam Petty used to describe her colleague and friend, Dr. Barbara Birch.
This was her chair, and she would sit here, and she would bounce her hands on the table with those little fists, and she would say, "We've got to stick to them like sticky glue. They can't get away from us."
Dr. Barbara Birch's entire career was focused on students.
If the student wasn't going to be the winner in whatever you were talking to her about, you weren't going to be able to talk to her very much longer.
For the past 3.5 years, many of those conversations happened here at the Kelly M. Birch Institute for Transformative Practices in Higher Education.
This institute is named for her daughter, who she loved more than life itself.
It's here that Dr. Birch's legacy will be felt for generations to come.
We don't have to wonder what Barbara would have wanted.
Birch graduated from WKU in 1959 before completing her master's and doctoral degrees at Indiana University. She came back in 1996 as Vice President of Academic Affairs and later Provost.
She loved every inch of WKU. I've seen her both throw back her head, laugh, and celebrate a WKU success, and I've seen her show the tears over struggles. Petty says her boss is of national interest. We would go to conferences around the country, and everyone knew her. It was like being in an entourage, her entourage when you were with her. People would get on the elevator and see her name played and go, oh, my goodness, it's Barbara Birch. Oh, could I get my picture made with you? Could I? As a transitional retiree, Birch was still co-teaching a leadership course with Petty, advising students and chairing numerous dissertation committees. And she believed that all things good that could come to this university would come through that student success, one student at a time. Petty says no one will ever know how many times she opened her home and her wallet to make sure students had what they needed. She was the smartest person in the room and the most compassionate person in the room. And it's just really hard to find that combination.
And Dr. Ken Birch and his family are watching this presentation today, and I just want to say a personal thank you to them for lending us Dr. Barbara Birch in her many, many facets in her work here and in higher education. American Association of State Colleges and Universities is actually where I first met Barbara many years ago. So we're very excited about this opportunity.
Thank you, Dean Murphy. Any comments or questions?
Well, I have to talk about Barbara. I became very close to her when we were doing the presidential search, and she was extremely valuable to that whole process. And as the video suggested, she was all about academics and had a passion, and I miss her every meeting. She was a great regent, and I'm glad her name will live on for a long time on this campus.
Dr. Bell, I agree with you. I spent a lot of time with her eyes on the WKU Sisterhood and as her co-chair, and I miss Barbara every meeting.
Thank you,
Ms. Chair, one of the things I miss most about Barbara was her ability to tell you exactly what she thought in an unvarnished, unfiltered way, but still able to leave the room, even if she disagreed with you, on good terms. And so I certainly miss her counsel as well. I also sat in the room with her, and as she shared this notion of the Kelly Birch Institute that she had cooked up as we talked about her transitional retirement. And the video does a nice job of capturing what she believed in. And what she believed in is that universities are not about faculty. They're not about staff. They're not about buildings. Universities are about students and transforming their lives. And the Kelly Birch Institute, which I hope becomes the Barbara and Kelly Birch Institute, is focused on exactly that. How do you take an organization and make it focus on what matters? Not what's easy, not what's important to me, but what its mission is. And so I'm happy to see this.
Barbara Birch was a remarkable person. My tenure on this board, you run across a lot of great people that influence you and make your experience as a regent beneficial. And Barbara Birch was one of those folks. A lot of resources and insight to the university. I can recollect at least two occasions where she came to Lebanon, 100 miles away. She drove to Lebanon to talk to me about certain situations. And her guidance, her input, was remarkable. I want to reach out to Ken. Ken was always the chauffeur. He would drive and sit outside in the vehicle. He would never come in. And I felt sorry for him, and Barbara would say, he's okay. He's okay. But anyway, all the comments are spot on. And like Philip said, the work she did in our presidential search 4 years ago, her insight, her perspective was unquestionable. Yeah, the benefit that
There's a story that not a lot of people know that I don't tell, and it involves Barbara Birch in 2009. And I'm sure most people in this room don't know this story. We had a technical problem over public broadcasting, and I was concerned about the future of the usefulness of our television studio related to students. And people don't think a lot about LED lighting now, but at that time in 2009, it wasn't something you did. And the remedy to our solution was LED lighting. And at the time, I could not single-handedly convince the person in IT that was over IT to fully fund what we were trying to do. It was a much different atmosphere on campus. The Opportunity Fund didn't exist. Things like that didn't happen. So I was invited to talk to Barbara Birch about the benefit of this. She closed the gap on the funding. Because of that, the students the next year in 2010 were able to use a system that was at no other campus anywhere in the world. There was only two studios like it in the United States at the time. And this organization, Western Kentucky University, received the first technical achievement Emmy of any media outlet in the history of Kentucky. And that's the kind of impact that made on the students that year. Now, I don't tell that story because she didn't really want a lot said about that. But it was because of that remainder of that funding that we were able to do that for these students. And that has lived on for many, many years.
Thank you. You've never really had a hug unless you've had one from Barbara. For those of us who've been blessed enough to have one, you've never really had one unless you've had one from her.
So, Regents, on the recommendation of the President, I would entertain a motion for the honorific naming of the Barbara Kelly Birch Institute for Transformative Practices in Higher Education.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Regent Bell, seconded by Regent Henson. Any other comments or discussions? Hearing none, call the vote. All in favor, aye. Raise your right hand.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes unanimously. Dean Murphy, thank you for your presentation. Extend our thanks and congratulations to the family.
Very good. Thank you all.
Next, we have one information item having to do with it's that time of year where the bylaws direct that the chair appoint a nominating committee. And so with consent of the folks that are going to be named, I will appoint once again George Nichols to chair of the nominating committee and ask Regent McKinney and Regent West to serve on that committee and come back to the full board with a proposed slate of officers for the upcoming new year. President, come on. We'll finish with the executive committee, and then I think the president will move up his report.
So I just wanted to end at least the public part of the meeting with a statement of thanks. As we begin to emerge from this global pandemic, even though there are headwinds for just about every part of our world, we're in tremendous shape comparatively. And the reason we're in tremendous shape is because of the work of our faculty and staff and the support of our alumni and the engagement of our whole community. We don't actually know what the past year and a half has done to our psyches yet. We're going to begin feeling that as we get back together and get back to work. But one of the reasons we're going to be able to do that in such a way that allowed everyone in this community to persist, to have their jobs, to not have layoffs, is because of the sacrifices we've all made for one another. And so I just want the whole community to hear from me how appreciative I am and how appreciative I am on behalf of our students for everything that we did to meet our mission. This was an awful year. But last week, when we celebrated commencement, it was a reminder that we do what we do not for ourselves, but for them. And I think that It was a tremendous celebration. Thank you to this board for your leadership through this pandemic. I'm essentially calling an end to it, if you can't feel it. It's not over, but we're close. And so I've been asked what my hope is for the fall. And I don't have a crystal ball. We will follow CDC guidelines. We'll take care of our community and health, safety, and well-being. But here's my hope and my expectation that we'll be back in person without social distancing, no need for masks, most of us vaccinated, and we're going to get back to the work at hand. And so I thank you to everyone who's gotten us to a place where we can all see that future. I wanted to mention two other things that are celebratory, and we'll have an opportunity to see this in person in the fall semester, but as Gaynor said, our students have gone back home. They're not traveling internationally yet, but they're like seeds to the wind. They're gone. But we had two organizations on campus that also produced historic results this year beyond our forensics team, and I wanted to make special note of that. Because we needed celebration this year, and I want to thank our volleyball team that made it to the Sweet 16 for the first time in team history, finished the season ranked tied with their highest ranking ever at 16, and I appreciate the leadership of Travis Hudson and the whole team. And here's the good news. They didn't need to have a senior night because the whole team's coming back next year. So get ready for another run. Right, Todd? And then this is pretty special too. We had been working for a long time, and certainly since I've been here, in elevating our cheer program. We don't talk a lot about what we've been doing because, well, it's a bit of a skunk works project. We hired a coach that was here for a few months and got recruited away because we wanted the best in the country. We got her here. And then she was stolen away to some other school up the road. But when she was leaving, we said, well, we want the second best in the country if we already landed the best. So who do we get? And I got to tell you, we recruited Allie Lumpkin here, who had a tremendous cheer career, who's growing our team. Even in the midst of a pandemic, they actually traveled to Orlando this past spring. And the co-ed team won third place, which is a remarkable achievement in itself. But our all-women's team is the national champion cheer team for the United States. They beat all the schools you think of that have amazing cheer programs, and they beat them handily this year. And you're going to see a new look, a new feel, and as Allie and Dalton Stanley, who's also coaching with us, as Allie has said, this is not the end point, this is the starting point. And so for everyone out there who's interested in cheering, we have a revised scholarship program. We are going to compete at this level every single year. And so I'm really proud of our cheer team. And the new outfits look outstanding. Great brand representation. One last point. Regent Edmonds, Garrett, thank you for your leadership during the past year. What a remarkable year it has been. You are our COVID SGA president, and we'll go down in history as that, a year of many firsts and hopefully many lasts. I appreciate all that you've done. Garrett won't be able to be with us in person at our final meeting because he is decamping from Bowling Green and headed off to the hallowed halls of Washington, D.C., where he will be interning and working with Representative Comer and a minority leader McConnell, pursuing his lifelong dream of and politics. And I have a certain feeling in my bones that we might see Mr. Edmonds on a ticket somewhere in the relatively near future, somewhere in the Commonwealth. So, Garrett, thank you for all you've done for us, for your leadership, for your kindness, for your colleagues, and for working so well with me. I'm thankful for you.
Thank you.
shout out to his best friend. We've had back-to-back great student regents. Will Harris, who is Garrett's best friend and roommate, those two have been a joy to work with the last 2 years.
I just want to say thank you all. This has been by far one of the best experiences I could have had in college. When I came to WKU, I knew I wanted to be involved. I wanted to make the most of my time here. I had the dream of being SGA president and sitting in here with you all. I just didn't think it would ever happen. But I surrounded myself with amazing people that educated me in a lot of ways, that elevated me to be here today. And it's an honor. This is an experience that very few students ever get to have. I'm grateful for it. I'm grateful to get to work alongside President Cavone for the last, since I've been here. It's been a fun ride for both of us in a way. I mean, I got to serve under two other presidents, Stephen Mayer and then Will Harris. And I got to learn a lot. I mean, it's amazing how much goes into maintaining and running a university that you hear students complain about things. And then I think about, man, they just don't even know. I mean, there's just so much that goes into it all. But thank you all for this experience. Y'all made it amazing. Thank you.
Well, I'd like to echo Regent Bell's comments. You've been a real asset to this board. Trying times, but you've been that breath of fresh air that made us all realize why we're here and what we're doing. I concur. I like to follow your star as it continues to rise. Mm-hmm. Anything else, President Cavone?
And that concludes my report.
Well, I just would like to echo some of those comments. They were all critical and important. One of the things was, please extend a big thank you to the graduation committee folks. The ceremony last week was phenomenal. And under the circumstances and the challenges, blessed with great weather, it was a beautiful sight to sit on that stage and to watch those students who, that's why we're here, come forward and accept their degree. And I look forward to that tomorrow.
All right. Mr. Chairman, I move that the board go into closed session as provided by KRS 61.810 for the following discussions. Deliberation on the future acquisition or sale of real property by the university.
We have a motion for executive session with a stated purpose. Do I hear a second?
Freddie, I messed up just a minute. Anthony and I had a little something we wanted to give to Garrett for the Alumni Association. I wasn't sure where we were supposed to jump in, and I apologize. Anthony and I wanted to give Garrett a lifetime Alumni Association membership. And I'm sorry, we were trying to figure out where we were supposed to jump in and do this. And Joy and I have been texting. I don't mean to be rude, and I didn't mean to do this. But Garrett, Anthony and I would like to present you with a lifetime alumni membership to the Alumni Association. You had this plan there. I'm sorry about it. Just because we weren't sure what to do. But congratulations. You're now an Alumni Association member. It's a great group. Most of us in here are part of that group. And Anthony is our executive director. Would you like to say something wonderful about our great organization?
So, Garrett is obviously now a lifetime membership. The pandemic caused us to rethink how we engaged our graduates last year. And so part of that is giving graduates the opportunity to sign up for a year's complimentary membership to be engaged with the work of the association. Over 46% of our May 2020 grads have engaged with us in some way over the past year. So we took what we learned and brought that into May 2021. Garrett signed up for that program and obviously won't have to worry about renewing his membership due to the gift from Regent Henson. So thank you, Regent Henson, for doing that. And Garrett, we look forward to engaging you as a leader in the Alumni Association.
And the funny part about it is I gave Will one. So obviously if I gave Will an Alumni Association membership, so it was a twofer. But I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that. We just were trying to figure out what to do. But congratulations for being a lifetime alumni membership.
Thank you.
To the Alumni Association.
Thank you. So I
second.
Got a second. Regent Brinkley second the motion to go into executive session. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved and approved. So at this point, we'll transition into executive session.